This is Circe Olson-Westner, the Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking with Larry Hurtado, his son Greg Hurtado, and daughter-in-law Rita. So Larry, or Wolfman, is an Air Force Vietnam veteran and happens to be on our board of directors. And I understand Greg, you followed in your father's footsteps by serving in the armed forces. I think it was the Navy?
Yes, ma'am.
So, well, hello, you guys. Thank you for doing this little interview with us. So, Greg, you joined the Navy. You weren't drafted, right?
Correct.
And how old were you?
19.
And so you were 19 years old, just graduated high school. Yeah. What made you join? Did your father have any influence on your choice, or?
To some degree, yes. A lot of my family members had been in the service, and so I decided that I would want to go ahead and join the service as well. So I went ahead and joined Navy as a jet mechanic in a squadron.
Jet mechanic. So, Larry, when your son told you he was joining, what did you think?
He told me after he was already in, but I was living in California at the time. So, he called me and told me he was already in the Navy and he'd be out there to visit me pretty soon.
So, with your own Vietnam experiences, did you feel glad that he was joining the service? Or?
In a way, yes, because there really wasn't much going on in the outside. And being military, I knew he'd get a lot of discipline, a lot of kind of like getting his head together.
Did you talk to your grandfather, Alfredo, or no, your uncle Alfredo, or to your other uncle, Sam, about this at all? Or
No, not at that time. I just went ahead and made the decision on my own.
So, Rita, you, where were you at the time? Did you guys know each other before he joined the Navy, or did you meet him afterwards?
I met him after he went through boot camp and school, and I met him after all that. He was going through another school with my brother, and that's how I met him.
Okay, and that was in California?
Yes, in Alameda.
So you guys decided to get married. Did you have any idea what it was like to be a Navy wife?
I had a little bit. My brothers were all in the service, the Navy, and cousins. So I had a little bit of an idea, but I mean, nothing really can prepare you until you go through it, I think.
Nothing drastic.
Well, you know, my husband wanted to join the Navy, and I told him absolutely not. I didn't want him gone 6 months at the time. So he joined the Army and went EOD, Explosive Ordnance, and he's been gone just as much. So
I think they go longer, don't they? They deploy more, I think, in the Army.
It's kind of a lonely life all around. So now Greg is in the Navy, and you guys were living in California. Did he go away on ship? Was he on board ship?
He went away a few times, and that was hard because they don't give you much notice. You know, they just give you a call, like 2 days, and say you're leaving, and you're gone. So that was hard for me.
And you had kids?
We had four babies.
Four babies, and you were all on your own. So how did you deal with that?
You just do. You don't really have a choice, you know. You have to make sure your house stays together and your husband has a place to come back to. So you just do what you have to do.
So how long were you guys a Navy family?
4 years.
Yeah, just around four and a half years.
So you had four small children, and how did you explain where Daddy was, or what did you do to make it easier? Did you do something special for the kids, or what?
God, I don't really. They were pretty little, so they didn't really. I mean, they missed him, you know, but they didn't really have that much of an understanding, you know, like about time, you know, that he was going to be gone a long time. And the two little ones were just barely 1 year apart, so they would make pictures, like when he was getting, they always made pictures for him and hung signs up on the windows, but they didn't have an idea when he'd come home, but they, you know, they knew he was coming home.
Yeah, and they went ahead, and her parents lived 45 miles away, so
they helped me.
Came, they seen her every so often, and you know, so it wasn't, you know, she had.
Yeah, I wasn't by myself.
Right, and my brother-in-law, we were stationed in the same squadron, so she had her sister-in-law in base housing at the same time.
So you were living on base at that time?
Yeah.
So did you join a lot of the wives' activities, the spouses' activities? No?
I didn't, no.
No, there wasn't really a whole lot going
in. It was a new squadron.
There was a brand new squadron in a reserve base.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't a whole lot that had been accomplished there, you know, like groups and set up yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we got there, we were the only active duty squadron. And we were brand spanking new. So, you know, being as new as we were, you know, it was like we were the ones that basically filled up everything, the base housing, and got, you know, things moving in a lot of different ways.
So, how many times did you go? I'm very bad with Navy terms, but how many times did you go out to sea, deploy?
The deployments that I did, we did some training deployments to Canada, and then we did some deployments to Okinawa, Japan, Pohang, Korea, Subic Bay, the Philippines, and the ship that we were on, the USS Tripoli, was a World War II aircraft carrier. So since we were doing countermine measures, sweeping the oceans for mines and stuff, basically that was just set up just for helicopters.
So mines from like World War II or?
No, mines that at any time we could find anything to this modern day.
Oh, so this isn't leftover mines. It's if anybody just puts out mines or, wow.
Right.
Are there a lot out there? I mean, did you find a lot of stuff or?
You know, at that particular time, we found there were some that they found that were older, and there was. But later on, during Desert Storm, that's when they found a lot more, and the type of stuff that they found sweeping the oceans and stuff like that.
Wow, I didn't know. I didn't know that they had minesweepers during peacetime. You know, that goes to show how much I think about these things. But that's interesting. Now, were you guys able to communicate while he was in out at sea?
No, not really. If he stopped somewhere in a port, is that, you know, he might be able to make a call, but it's not like now, you know, they have cell phone, they have a computer, and you know, we didn't have all that. So if I was at home, I would miss the call, and I never knew when he was going to call.
Right.
So, no.
So, what was the hardest thing about being a Navy dad? You had four little kids at home, and what was the hardest thing?
For me, it was going ahead and basically getting married and saying, you know, I'll be a husband and a father and, you know, having our children and then going ahead and saying, okay, I'll see you later. I gotta go. And leaving her there, you know. There was times where, you know, she had to go and she was on her own. And we had to leave, you know. But she was able to do a lot of the things with my sister-in-law. And they kind of helped each other out.
So you had some support. And, I know you said your family was a little bit, you know, down the road, but you guys kind of hung out together then. Did she have children as well?
Yes, she did. She had three of them.
So the kids played together and things like that. So so do you have a special memory, Rita, about maybe something that maybe... when he came back, or do you have a special memory of something that happened as your time as a Navy wife that stands out?
Oh my God, there's so many different. I don't know about one.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard.
Well, it was always nice when they were coming back, and you didn't see the ship at all, you know. And then all of a sudden, you look up and you see them all of them standing on the deck. Is that what you call them?
Yeah,
the flight deck. They're all standing out there. That was always nice to see them come back like that.
Did you take the kids then down? Mm-hmm. And
yeah, we'd be happy, and they'd have signs and their flags, and it was nice.
So, Larry, you were talking about something that you thought about when they were out there in California?
Yeah. Before I say anything about that, he also had two uncles from his mom's side of the family that were also in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And both of them have since passed away because of their PTSD. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Danny Lopez, the other one was Richard Lopez, and he was very close to them. He was kind of like raised with them.
So that might have influenced you somehow in joining the military. Maybe you don't think about it, but maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah? Probably. You come from a huge military family. So.
Plus, he had, I remember when they were stationed there in Oakland, there in Alameda, I was living in California. And they came out on the news. There was a huge earthquake right on San Francisco Bay, the Oakland area. And I don't know if you recall, there was it's called the Nimitz Freeway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There were one of them stacked on top of the other one.
Uh-huh.
And one of them, that one came down and trapped a lot of people, killed a lot of people. And I recall one day, that day I talked to my son and he told me, he says they had just gotten off the freeway because they had been living off base and they were moving on base at that time when the freeway collapsed and they had just gotten off the freeway.
So how was that? Were you both in the car when that happened because you were moving? What did it feel like to be in an earthquake? Did you even realize it?
Yes. Well, we were in a hurry because we were, the truck had loaded up all of our things and we were moving and trying to beat traffic and trying to get to watch the World Series game there when the Giants were playing. And so we were in a rush. And so when we went through, we went under that Nimitz Freeway and down under a tunnel that allows us to come up the other side into Alameda. And we got there, we offloaded the kids, went upstairs, and the truck with our stuff came, and we took a couple of things in, and then everything started rumbling and moving, and all I remember is her standing out in the middle of a circle that we had because we lived in a little cul-de-sac. Mm-hmm. and the asphalt was moving like water.
Whoa.
And so it was spooky.
Where were the kids?
They were with us. I mean, he had two, and my sister had our baby, and I was pregnant.
So
we were trying to get out of the apartment.
So imagine the asphalt is moving like waves and you're nervous and wondering how bad is it going to be? Were the kids freaking out?
Yeah, they were kind of in shock.
They were crying. You could hear glass and everybody was like crying. It was bad.
It was
a shock.
I actually remember that because that game was televised and in the middle of the game, the whole thing went like that. We were living in Germany at the time, and we were watching it on AFN radio, on AFN TV. I remember that now that I think about it. So what happened then? Because Larry had said that you guys got involved somehow in the cleanup of.
Yeah, they the shore patrol came to all the base housing, and picked up all the HM15. Sailors and said that they were needed in at the squadron and said come as you are. Don't even have to dress in your uniform. And off we went. We jumped in the back of their truck, and we got there, and we just started going to work, and we were loading up stuff in our helicopters and flying stuff, and we were picking up backhoes mm-hmm. and with cables, and actually flying them over the freeway and dropping them off on top of the concrete on the freeway to dig people out, and then we were moving stuff by hand and doing all that kind of stuff.
At the time, it probably didn't sink in, but after you've had a chance to reflect on that, has that affected you in any way?
Yeah, to a certain degree, it has. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, outside this country or whether you're in your own country, and it could be a national disaster, you know, it could be all kinds of terrorism, it could be all kinds of things, but, you know, there's things that could happen, you know, at any time, and they can be very devastating to, you know, a lot of people, you know, at one given time, and so you never know where you might be or what you might be doing that, you know, you look at every day as being a good day, you know, and because life is good, you know, life is grand, you know, because you never know when something like that could occur, because just like us, we were like 15 to 30 minutes underneath that bridge.
Wow.
And that was it, but we would have been right underneath it.
So there, but for the grace of God, go you, right? So, Rita and Greg, you have a son now who was a Marine, who joined the Marines. Do you think that had anything to do with your having served in the military and Larry and the family? Did he have a plan, or did he just randomly up and join, or?
Like a lot of other young kids after 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, they just, that was the first thing he's ever done without asking or talking to us. It was too late. He had already done it, mm-hmm. you know.
So he just came home and said, hey, I joined the Marines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Him and my nephew.
Worst day of my life.
So, when was that? How soon after 9/11? When did he join?
December.
Oh, wow. So it was right after.
Right after.
Wow. So when he came home and he said, I've joined the Marines, and you've already said that, you know, you were pretty devastated. What did you say? What was that talk like?
Well,
nothing to say. I mean, it's done.
It's done. It was kind of hard because due to the fact that, you know, automatically we knew he was going into a combat zone. You know, he was mm-mm. looking at that, and we were hoping that he might not be, but he was, they were basically in the 2nd Expeditionary Marines out of Camp Lejeune, mm-hmm. and they were along with the 1st out of, the 1st Expeditionary out of Camp Pendleton, and they were the first ones into Baghdad, and so when it first all started.
So you being parents now, obviously, Larry had combat experience, and you've done a lot with the Navy, seen a lot of places, met a lot of different people from different cultures, and then having, you know, done a lot of humanitarian aid, you kind of have an idea of what it's like in a combat zone. Did that make it harder for you as parents because you could actually visualize, or did it make it, I guess it can't make it easier, but did your imagination run more amok about what horrible things could happen, or were you pretty calm about it?
No, we were not calm at all.
No, we weren't. Our computer was on 24 hours a day because they could send an email mm-hmm. to us, you know, or talk to us. Mm-hmm. And it was that was our only communication with them, and we didn't know when. It was like a siren going off when they tried to get a hold of us, and the whole house would wake up. And
different times, so it'd be like between two and five in the morning.
Doorbell.
Wow. And it just, you know, they went the first time, and then they came back for a few months, and they were supposed to come home on leave, and once they did, they called us back and said, "We're not coming home on leave. We just got told we're going back to Iraq," and they gave us a 96-hour liberty, and so we're going to be leaving in a few days. And so Rita and I jumped in our van, our parents' van, and we went ahead and drove all the way to Camp Lejeune with the kids to go see them off.
Wow. Wow. So you had expected several weeks of togetherness, and it was just a few hours. Wow. So is he okay?
No. I don't think anybody can come back from the war and be okay. I don't think anybody comes back from the war, and that's not disrespectful to the ones that have come back, but no. You can't go through something like that and be the same.
Yeah.
Nobody comes back.
War changes them, you know, and it's been difficult for him, and it's been difficult for our nephew Paul, and they lost a lot of good friends, and just like her, you know, and I, you know, we met a lot of these young boys when we went to Camp Lejeune and stuff like that, and literally they were young boys, and we got to be close with them, you know, and we lost two of them. But the thing was is that they don't come back the same, you know. And once, you know, they've lost their fallen brothers and stuff, and some of the things that they've had to do while they were there.
You know, and it's been going on now for over 10 years. The Operation Enduring Freedom, the Afghanistan conflict, is surpassed Vietnam as America's longest war, and so we military parents, my son went to Iraq as well. We sit here and we want our kids to do so well, and we want to be strong and brave, and inside we're really concerned. And you know, then that you get a call and, well, what do you think about Syria? What do you think about you know, all this other stuff? And it's scary when you've got kids serving. So you had a nephew that was serving, that grew up with you, with him as well. So they both joined together, and and neither one of them are still in, or not making a career of it.
No.
So we have to wrap this up. But what would you like to say to other parents who have kids possibly going into harm's way, for future generations of kids that are going to deploy somewhere? What advice do you have for parents who might hear this podcast?
I would say not to let your kids know that you're upset, because they have to be, when they're over there in that zone, they have to be there. And if they're worried about their parents and their mothers, they're not there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would say, like, we never got emotional in front of them, because I just didn't want them to be thinking about that.
Right.
About us. So, I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. And when I talk, you know, to any of our boys or my nephew, you know, that like a son to us, you know, it was like, you know, you got a job to do, and you know you're doing it for the right reasons, you know, and whether we agree with it, you know, decisions or whatever, you know, it's all what we do for the freedom that we got here in our country, you know, and so that's what you got to keep in mind, is that, you know, we're trying to do what's best for our nation and the well-being of our children and their children and stuff like that, you know. And so, you know, they were they were really strong, and so when you talk to other, to your children and tell them, you know, keep your head up, you know, what you're doing, you know, even though it doesn't sound like a good thing, they are doing a good thing, mm-hmm. you know, for their children, because, you know, we wouldn't have what we have, you know, these days compared to other countries.
Right. Grandpa, you want to throw in a comment there?
Well, like now that the kids are back, they see that they struggle with PTSD and all kind of stuff. And see, my son, he hung around with his uncles when they first came back from Vietnam. And one of them was Army, the other one Marines, or and like I said, both of them are gone by now. They've passed away, and so my son took care of them when they were going through a lot of the PTSD, the problems that they were doing, their drinking and whatever they were doing, mm-hmm. and so he always made sure that they would get home safe. So he had a lot of experience with that.
So now you're doing that with your son?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. They have PTSD and I watch over them quite often.
Well, once again, this is Circe Olson-Westner, Executive Director of the Museum of the American Military Family, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. This truly is a family that has given lots of service for the country. So I wanted to thank you all very much for spending this time with me, and thank you.
My grandfather was World War I, an uncle that was World War I, an uncle that... the French Legion Medal of Honor recipient, World War II. On my father's side, I had two uncles that were also World War II. My Uncle Sammy, we was in Korea. I was Vietnam. My son was, he didn't go into a war zone, but he was there during Desert Storm, or right before Desert Storm started?
Yeah.
Around that time, when he got out of the military, and then our two boys that were in Iraq, and now I've got a niece that is in Korea.
So truly, your service runs in your family. Listen, thank you very, very much, Larry. Greg.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.